This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
A special thank you to Jeff, Michelle and Chloe, our lovely front desk people for the past 3 months. Welcome to the kitchen table. This is our very last show and it is a very sad time for all of us.
Sad face.
That wonderful voice you can hear is my lovely technical producer. It's Christian Vega.
Hey.
I'm Shannon Gillies and...
I'm Patrick Whalen-Smith.
Oh, look, a kitchen table can be a prime vehicle for social change. It is a social gathering point for communities, enabling everyone to talk, listen, and share ideas on subjects of mutual interest. There are no right or wrong ideas, and everyone's contribution is valuable. Our show over the past 3 months has examined issues important to the wider Australian community with a focus on minority groups, including the LGBTQI sector. And a key focus of the program is to show just how the
LGBTIQ.
Should we throw in a P in there as well for the pans?
The Elgibit. It's the Elgibit.
Oh my god, it's amazing. Movement.
I liked quilt bag.
Quilt bag. Yeah. That's nice. That's beautiful. Not very culinary, but I do enjoy it. It needs to be, I think, like a soup. Like a very beautiful stew that has been created.
That's okay.
Said tangent.
I did say tangents earlier today. How the alphabet soup that is our community isn't the only group fighting for recognition or acceptance. Now, our show over the season has tackled all the taboos and we have community, we have talked national issues and we have even broached international war crimes. We've talked politics, we've talked religion and now today, considering it's our last show for now, we had a better way to go out than talking about the impact sex has had on food.
Sex!
Sex! Yay. How does that involve with food? What? You're about to find out. But first, before we jump into that, this show is dedicated to Dr. John Kramer. He is receiving a doctorate from Massey University at the Mary Potter Hospice today. He is currently getting care for bone cancer. Dr. John Kramer is one of my former chef lecturers. He taught me the larder section. He failed me on my sushi plate because apparently it just didn't look right.
Just didn't look right.
And
he needed to listen into when we were talking about the seaweed, didn't he?
I think he had other priorities.
Probably. My apologies.
But this show is definitely dedicated to John and all the good help and work he's done for chefs and giving students a second chance, especially those with learning difficulties like dyslexia. All right, that was pretty deep. Today we are joined by
Anna Brownfield
from Poison Apple Productions. And Anna is a feminist pornography maker and academic and enjoys food.
Oh, certainly do. How else do I maintain my curves?
Amazing.
That's why I've got the body of the Greek god you see before you.
Yes, exactly.
I'm surprised that we are not playing Bootylicious today then in that case, because I do love my curve, my round edges. I enjoy them very much from all my... Well, my... Oh, what is that word?
Pastry?
All my hardcore mastication. That's it.
Oh, nice one.
We can chew over that later.
It's Sunday.
We're going out with a bang.
Right, going out, blades of glory. Now, before we jump into discussion, we're going to go to a song. And to take us through to our imminent end, it's the song it's Pump Up the Jam by Technotronic.
Amazing. A bit of a 90s flashback. You're on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. Aww.
I'm tired out. I was just dancing.
Amazing. Pump Up the Jam by Technotronic.
It's all about preserving, you know, the dignity of the kitchen table here. Preserves our jam. You are on the kitchen table and today we are discussing the role of food plays in sex. So this is our content warning for those who might not enjoy either or both. But don't expect anything too heavy. And our show today is divided into 4 blocks. And the content should make for rigorous debate. Basically, Radio Land, welcome to the kitchen table's food fight.
Ding, ding!
Who will win?
Who's got the cream pies?
It's a shame they don't let us bring food into the studio.
That really is a shame. We could have like decorated this place with all the a selection of condiments and jams and creams and soups. And I don't know why I'm listing things right now. Someone else talk.
Well, I suppose you could then just spend the whole show masticating instead.
Of course, masticating in the corner. Now...
Makes for great radio.
Yeah.
Nom, 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 nom. Nom, nom, nom.
Eat with my hands now.
Yeah. So we're just basically going to jump into this subject right now. Is it actually okay to use food and sex and advertising? What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because I think it speaks to two of the greatest things that people love is food and sex. Like... that's a really good evening for me.
It does. I do adore it, but I do find it a little bit odd that we keep that food is so sexualized to I think to everyone. It is a bit unusual for me because, I mean, who was the one who decided suddenly that we'll get the woman, and I'm totally stealing this from The Simpsons, we take rich creamery butter and then add it onto several pounds of ground beef, add bacon, we call it Good Morning Burger. That kind of thing. Like, who thought of that is what I'm curious to. Who just like, yep, you know what a burger needs? It needs one very, you know, breathy voice.
But do you think it's that also thing is like, well, why do people eat? And I mean, if you look at a lot of the advertising in terms of what people advertise, it's not necessarily food that's actually any good for your standards of food. It's like treat food sort of thing, I suppose. So I think it's really interesting. They use that sort of seduction to kind of get you in there. And it's like, well, I'm working, I'm not getting laid. So, oh yeah, that cream, you know, double cream ice cream looks really good now. So, you know, is it that sort of thing as well, maybe?
I'm curious to see them actually trying to put that with like eating like celery. Enjoy your celery.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy all the food groups.
Eat the whole stalk. It's like, it's...
it's watery.
Yeah.
It's stringy.
Like, you know
Negative calories.
You know those banana ads?
Well, that's,
the banana
that,
ads.
That, yeah. When I was thinking about this on my way here, that was the only ad I could think of. The na-na-na-na-na-na. You know,
make your like, body sing.
Yeah, but it's all about fun. It's all about having energy sort of thing. So, but that was the only ad I could think of on TV that really advertised a food that wasn't kind of like you know... As a treat food.
It is odd. I'd like to see them try that the other way around. And also because a lot of these type of foods, like, I mean, the ones that get advertised I've seen recently is pears and avocados. They have this, like, advertising for this one food stuff.
Mm.
And, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit later, but sometimes they can be used as aphrodisiacs. I'm going, you're missing a prime market here. Have avocados.
Well, there is an avocado ad in New Zealand a few years ago, and they were using a young woman who would have been about maybe in her early 20s, and it was promoting it, and it was just the way that she was eating it. She was in a swimsuit. She's by the swimming pool, and it's just like, an avocado a day kind of thing. And it's just like, that's sex.
Really? I didn't know that they did that. That's cool.
In my opinion, that's sex being used to sell a food. And it's just like, why is that okay to be played in, say, daytime hours or hours where, you know, your children are definitely going to see it?
I suppose because it's not explicitly saying sex.
Mm.
And God forbid that, sex gets talked about. God forbid.
Gosh,
that.
Absolutely. You're not allowed to talk about sex.
No.
But you know what's interesting, though?
No one's having it.
Yeah, we are. Just not talking about it.
We're just not having it. Well,
I think food is being more and more promoted by everyday people. Like, the advertising of food is actually becoming a lot more democratized. And we see that through things like the emergence of food porn and Instagram, where people are actually taking photos of food. And in a way, you're advertising what you've just ordered.
Says you're the connoisseur, though, yeah, of food porn.
I am so guilty of food porn.
That's all I look at your Instagram for. It's for.
I never quite understood the concept of food porn, and I'm curious to actually hear what your opinions are, because for me, and I was talking about this earlier, I'm not allowed to take a picture of it. My mouth will not allow me to take a picture of the food because it's time I could be spent eating it. It's pretty much just it's going, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I'll take this picture. Can't talk eating. Nom, 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 nom.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's... it's a whole lot of things. I take photos of every meal I eat, but I don't post it on Instagram if, say, I didn't enjoy it or I didn't like it.
Mm. So you take it, there is a time period between that.
Mm.
I occasionally take photos of food that I've made.
Mm.
And because I have a lot of trouble eating what I've made straight away because I've just spent all that time making it and I'm kind of going, oh, and now I've got to eat it. But then, of course, you eat it and you go, wow, I did a good job. Or, oh my gosh, I should put this straight in the bin right now. Or feed it to someone else. So, you know, feed it to one of my enemies, like my father did with vegetable soup.
What?
There's this news report from ABC News, and they're talking about burger outlets using sex to sell burgers. So basically you have people eating them and... in a very, I'm not going to say in a seductive manner, but it's using young woman once again to eat a burger and slowly while a male's voice comes in over it describing exactly what's involved with the burger.
So there's a lot of special sauce dripping down the chin sort of thing, is there?
I don't know what you're trying to say there, Anna.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the sort of thing you'd go straight away, wouldn't you? I mean, if you want to sort of get that sort of sexual connotation, you know, the overtly sexual connotation.
I'm sorry, do you know something that we don't about the recipe of special sauce?
Oh my God! Well, maybe.
Oh my God.
That's why it is special.
If you would like to tell us about your special sauce, text it on 0427JOY949 or send us an email at onair@joy.org.au. We've got to go to some messages now, but we'll be right back. You're on the kitchen table with Patrick, Shannon, Christian and Anna.
It's Michael Kirby here, and I am introducing Joy 94.9, the best radio station in Victoria.
You are on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. You're with Shannon, Patrick and Christian. We are joined by the fabulous Anna Brownfield talking about food and sex.
And how it all interacts. This segment, we are going to debate aphrodisiacs. I'm looking forward to this. Do they work? Have you ever tried them? Or are you bitterly disappointed? Should we all talk about my personal experience with oysters and why I hate them?
You mean phlegm in an ashtray?
Oh, it was terrible. Like, honestly, one of my summer jobs was to shuck oysters. And you're at the seaside resort town. And, of course, this is where everyone goes for their honeymoons or bachelor parties and things. And so there you are in this horrible little kitchen basement shucking oysters. Oh, we want another couple of dozens of these. And it's just like, I hate them. I can't think of the worst food. Like, if anyone goes, I got you some oysters, it's just like, get out. Get out now.
I tried oysters when I was a lot younger, not with an aphrodisiac in mind. But I remembered I was you know, they say swallow them whole. And I found that a really unusual concept. And so I think I got through about three and I was like, okay, this is all right. But it was I think it was Oysters Kilpatrick. Is that?
Oh, so you had the little bit of bacon, a little bit of Worcestershire sauce.
No, it wasn't Kilpatrick then. It was something that was lemony, actually. It must have been, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, and I got through three and then the fourth, my body actually would not accept it anymore. It was saying, no, no, no. Like my throat closed up and said, no more of this.
So it said, you've got enough zinc. You can stop now.
Yeah, pretty much. Your vitamin E levels are fine. Like it just... calm your farm. But that was not a good one. I've tried some other aphrodisiacs, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the good old-fashioned one, obviously, is anything that involves chocolate, because I am a chocoholic. I do adore chocolate and dark chocolate. Although occasionally it does get to a point where the sex part kind of gets replaced and I'm just like, no, go away, chocolate here.
Or I've eaten too much chocolate that I no longer want to have sex because I'm actually feeling a bit ill.
Or it's going to be literally, I'm very sorry, you can do the work, I'm just here. with chocolate smeared.
I'm going to be a starfish.
Yes.
I didn't get the whole aphrodisiac thing.
Neither do I really. It's just I tried it.
If the point is to, like, get you in the mood, I kind of don't need any encouragement. food is great and I love food.
But what about, for example, though, when you're having a meal with someone who you find very attractive and you like him and everything's working out well, and then... For me, I find that beautiful because it does get me in the mood in a different kind of way, though, because you're starting off eating and you're enjoying each other's company and it massages you into this state. And then
I think that's the booze talking or the footsies you're playing under the table. I don't know whether that's necessarily the food.
I always find not necessarily the food. It was the It's a ritual.
Yeah, interaction.
It's a, yeah, the personality is doing it. I haven't had that reaction from food where I go, right, I've just eaten this. Wow, here it goes.
Lady boner.
Done.
Wait, have I? There is something that I have done that I think.
But do you think more aphrodisiacs are aimed towards men? Like if you think about, you know, snake wine or anything like that, that sort of comes up. It's all about, you know, trying to get a hard on, isn't it, a lot of the time? There's how many sort of, I think Spanish fly is about the
Spanish
only one I can
flies,
think of.
You've also got bear bile. Like apparently keeping a bear in a cage and having its bile from its stomach drained. It's apparently if you drink that, that's going to be an aphrodisiac for you. Like you are just going to be able to go that much longer in bed because you've.
Is that for men or women or
for
both?
Men? For
I
men.
Think that's
yeah,
just going to hurt
my throat.
Yeah,
see, this is what I mean. It's all about getting up and staying hard longer, isn't it, really? It doesn't seem to be about, like, well, let me get you juicy and let me get you excited and let me engorge your labia or anything like that.
Well, with the whole thing with the bear bile, I mean, I've got to use my throat later. I don't want it to be covered in bile.
And then, of course, yeah, you've got rhinos getting shot and left to die very painfully just so someone can take their horns.
And use it for...
Yeah, and also tigers. Like, their genitals are used as an aphrodisiac as well. Mm. And you just see it going, how does this turn anyone on?
Mm.
That is, like, the worst food case ever.
Looking at other aphrodisiacs as well, I mean, you've got stuff like I was talking about the avocado. I think it's a lot of those ones that are kind of, they're sexually, they look like the genitalia, for example. I mean,
like figs.
Like figs, there's a kind of, but I think in that one there's almost a, it's the consumption of it. I mean, you know, when you see people eating strawberries and eating these fruits and there's a seduction, it's that type of seductive quality of devouring it, that hardcore mastication coming back there. But it's, you know, like if you're devouring a fig and it's beautiful the way you're devouring this fig and it looks so sensual and then next you're devouring something else. But it's...
I find it interesting the whole...
bananas, though, I don't do.
The whole dinner date phenomena, how, like, that's what you do to get to know someone that you're sexually attracted to, because eating is not my most attractive state.
It's like you never go out with someone that you've just met and say, hey, let's go out for noodles. Yeah. Let's go get an ice block.
I don't know.
Let's slurp together.
Let me splash all this food all over me so you can see how uncoordinated I am.
See, the way I think about it with the dinner date is the fact that I want them to see me at my worst so that then it's... up from there. So I will eat with them and I'll enjoy it. And I don't hold back. It's not like, oh, I've got to wash my feet. I'm just literally going, oh, I want the wine. I want the entree. I'm taking dessert. And then you can share the dessert and that's kind of nice. And usually it's ice cream, so it melts and somehow that's sexual. And then later it's just, okay, cool. And now the wine's talking a little bit. Not that I needed it for you. Let's go. Occasionally I do.
So I have a few doubts about aphrodisiacs, but I mean, there's certainly food that sort of massage your libido, if you like. And I'm reminded of the story of how tiramisu was invented.
Oh, yes.
So tiramisu literally translates from Italian to pick me up. And it was invented by a Italian brothel owner who thought that combining coffee and alcohol and cake would be a really good way to keep clients in the mood and awake, hence more business.
That's amazing.
The cake part is the only thing that I'm kind of going, I don't know. After I eat cake, I just want to lie down.
Maybe you and carbohydrates are not as good as you thought you were.
Maybe we're actually mortal enemies and it's the mole. In my digestive system. It's starting to take me over.
Maybe you need to eat less of it then, maybe instead.
Eat less tiramisu? Who are you, Anna?
Well, yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, I couldn't eat less tiramisu. It's not going to work.
Oh, tiramisu is fantastic. That's interesting.
That made me hungry.
That is so interesting, the creation of that.
That's... I just want to jump very quickly back to the... I know we were talking about avocados being used in advertising before, especially with swimsuit models. Why not?
Yum.
And it's also considered an aphrodisiac. Just by looking at the shape, that's meant to be associated with sexuality. And the Aztecs called the avocado the testicle tree.
Oh.
Oh.
They put the fruit hanging in pairs on the tree resembled testicles.
That's interesting.
People have those kind of things, not with... It was, I mean, also with avocados, but then you're looking at stuff like an orchid. The word orchid comes from testicle, and that, I mean, some people have talked about, I mean, orchids are very rare and people love them, but there's also a sexuality behind that. That's, and I think they have been using culinary, oh, obviously, vanilla and that.
Yeah, vanilla beans are orchids.
Yeah, sorry, it took me a while to remember that.
there's also the thing, I mean, there's a great book called Wetlands, which is about a German book, which is about a girl who is obsessed with avocados and she eats lots of them. She grows the pips in glasses and turns them into trees. But she also enjoys inserting them and using them sexually as well.
Oh my gosh. And to go further with this avocado stuff, wow. The Catholic priests in Spain found the fruit so obscenely sexual that they actually forbade it.
Ooh, really?
You're kidding me.
You couldn't have avocados. Oh, Catholic priests.
Because they look like balls.
Speaking actually of...
But they're also very good at boosting your immune system. So you know what? What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Eat an avocado.
Speaking of...
Get healthy.
Of objects, there was that novella, The Story of an Eye, and I cannot remember the name of the writer. It's Björk's favourite book, which is why I learnt about it. And I won't go into too much details because it does get a bit graphic and obscene. But one of the early scenes in that is a woman and she's inserting, but it's between the... Viscosity, is that a word? That's the word?
Yes.
Of soft-boiled and hard-boiled eggs and the differences between them.
Interesting.
In a sexual manner. Björk tried this and then she forgot. I can't believe your favourite book, you'd forget how the eggs were used, because she then used it for fried eggs for Venus as a boy where she's playing with the eggs around her face. but yes, I found that unusual.
You want to know what else is unusual? We need to go with this. According to a 2004 study conducted by researchers at the University of Chicago, the real aphrodisiac for women, because we've been talking about what really works for men at the moment.
Yeah.
But what really works for women, according to the study, is the smell of a new mother and her baby. Woman, yeah. And the study
was very sexy.
Really? That's not sexy. It just makes me go, oh, lots of nappies, breastfeeding, sore boobs.
Lack of sleep,
no.
I can see why it's... Why it can not be sex, but I can kind of work out maybe why. And it's the, and I suppose it's this idea of, I suppose it's almost like this primitive instinct to keep of kicking in of having children, and then to get children, you have to have sex.
Well, what happened was...
Not that everyone wants children. It is okay. It's a bit of a stretch.
What was happening was women were given pads used by women while breastfeeding to smell. And when smelling the pads used by a lactating woman who had already had partners, reported a dramatic increase in sexual desire. While single women experience an increase in sexual fantasies, and smelling a fresh pad untouched by mum or baby did nothing for the woman's sex drives at all.
Wow.
Oh, the University of Chicago, thank you.
Who came up with that study?
Can get a grant for anything.
I know. I've seen some performance art and they get grants for anything.
Amazing. You're on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. You're with Shannon, Patrick and Christian. We are joined by the fabulous Anna Brownfield, and we'll be talking about your work when we come back from these messages.
Ooh, here
we Amazing. Go. You're on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You're on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. You're with Patrick, Shannon and Christian, and we are joined by the lovely Anna Brownfield.
Oh, thanks, Christian. That's very sweet of you.
Oh. So for people who may not be familiar with Anna Brownfield, you've sort of been out and about recently, talking all things feminist porn.
That is correct, yes. I was recently having a bit of a chat at the Wheeler Centre about it, which was quite sort of high. Well, I thought it was quite a highbrow place to talk about feminist porn. So, but yeah, I've sort of always, I think, how long have I been doing it now? I think back to 2006 was when I first made my first film. And at that stage, there wasn't really anyone in Australia making feminist porn. In fact, I approached a couple of companies and they said, why would we give it? I was trying to find some funding. They said, why would we give you any money? You know, we can go over to an Eastern European country and pay a woman, you know, $50 to do DP. And, you know, so why are we going to give you anything? And I went, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey and it's amazing how from that time to now, you know, there's like probably about half a dozen people or more making feminist porn in Australia. And then there was also lots of excellent debate about, well, what actually is feminist porn and can you be mainstream and still be a feminist and make feminist porn? And it goes on and on and on.
Amazing. So for people who may not be familiar with the term feminist porn, how would you describe it?
Well, I think it's such a wide-reaching thing, and I've been working on a documentary called Doing It Her Way about so looking at that and exploring it, and it is so varied. It's so sort of as individual as, you know, women are individuals, I suppose. So it's not – it's probably more independent, I think, is one thing. It probably focuses more on female pleasure. It sort of celebrates a diversity of sexualities and genders as well a lot more than sort of mainstream without sort of – it tends to do that without the sort of traditional way you see a lot of the, you know, particularly trans people represented in mainstream porn is a very fetishization, you know, they're very fetishized where they're not so much, you know, it's just a part of being a sexual person. It's not considered to be something unusual or different. So
amazing. And there really is a lot of sort of examples of feminist porn that is coming out of Australia, which is a bit interesting considering the laws in our country.
Yes. Well, it's actually illegal to shoot porn outside of Canberra. And even then, it's kind of like a weird loophole within the Prostitution Act in the ACT. But it's also, which a lot of people don't realise, it's actually it's legal to buy porn in Australia. But the only place it's actually legal to sell it is, again, in the ACT. So, you know, we consume it everywhere and, you know, most people just turn a blind eye to it and so forth and, unless someone makes a complaint. So it's kind of, it's sort of strange. It's like, oh, yeah, you can go into any shop and get it, but people sort of don't, you know, legally, you're still doing something illegal and most people don't know that.
Hmm. Is it one of those one of those ones where you're buying it is in like the black plastic bag and you're sort of walking out? Because that's what I had in Japan as such whenever there was anything that was sort of sexualized.
No, it's, well, I mean, this is particularly towards DVD and, you know, VHS back in the day and so forth. It's not, I mean, magazines are a different thing. You can actually legally sell those, but depending on the content depends on how much of a black bag they need to be in.
Okay.
Now, today we're examining the role that food actually plays in pornography. And you may not be a porn star, you may not look like a porn star, but you know what? Sure as hell, you can eat like a porn star.
I already do.
Oh, Patrick.
Is there a... Amazing.
So we're looking at the diets and what's actually involved. And there are a few porn stars out there who've actually sort of like gone out and actually put out what they do eat. And what they do. And there's the world famous James Dean, who actually has his own cooking show.
Amazing. Why not?
Just in case this whole pornography thing doesn't work out for him.
it doesn't surprise me because you will find like a lot of porn stars or porn performers are really, you know, they're incredibly body conscious. So they're incredibly health conscious. I mean, the amount of them I've met and a lot of them are vegans. Most of them are kind of almost straight edges. Like they don't drink alcohol. They don't drink coffee. You know, they don't have caffeine. It's just, I was really quite astounded. I thought, hey, being, you know, kind of, you know, porn performers on the outside of society, it's like, you know, they'll be living it up and taking lots of drugs and, you know, treating their bodies really bad. But I actually found the opposite because I think it is about their body being the tool for them to make money is that they're actually all really quite health conscious.
What type of porn performers are we talking about in mainstream porn in I suppose feminist porn performers, or is this just in general, just all porn performers?
I think it's probably in general. I mean, I think there'd probably be Courtney Trouble was out here recently. I'm sure she was probably on Joy at some point in time, and she's, you know, she's into queer. You know, her whole thing is queer indie porn, and you know, I mean, yes, she likes to eat, and she does celebrate that, and she's very about being fat positive and all the rest of it, and you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. So there's that element to her, but at the same time, it's like, you know, she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke. She doesn't do drugs, you know. It's just like I was quite surprised. Like I thought, oh, you know, she's really into eating and really into this, and you know that she'll be out there sort of.
So there's like the hedonism that moves through.
Yeah, it doesn't sort of, you know, it's like, well, yes, you know, it seems like the only sort of, you know, I suppose bad thing or sin in inverted commas that they engage in is having sex with people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as sex workers, and I'm being inclusive of porn performers when I say that, it's more about, I guess, celebrating our bodies and being confident about our bodies. And that's certainly one of the things that I got out of doing sex work was being a lot more confident with my body and not worrying that, you know, I wasn't the ideal sexual construct that sort of society imposes on you. So yeah, it is a lot to do with that.
My understanding of the crew of the industry is that it's quite nutritionally focused. Like if you do want to do well and be successful and actually enjoy your job, is that you do have to be a little bit more nutritionally focused. Like you are looking at you know, something balanced. You're not just going to go out and eat a whole bunch of empty carbs or saturated fats. You actually do need your body to look a particular way, or you just need to be comfortable. Is that right?
I think it's about being comfortable. Well, look, I think it depends. If you're talking about corporate or mainstream porn, I think there's very much a particular aesthetic that they are looking for in terms of, you know, body, in terms of body hair, and so forth. So, you know, I mean, you look at James Dean, it's like, yeah, of course he's got a cooking show, because it's like, you know, he's the kind of boy next door, you know, he's got a pretty hot, slim, you know, body, but, you know, he's got enough muscle, but not too over the top sort of thing. Whereas I suppose the thing is, if you look at feminist porn or indie porn, you know, that's where sort of you'll find alternative body types and so forth. So I think in terms of that sort of, you know, that sort of movement of porn, it's not so much about presenting this sort of ideal body. It's about, as Christian said, it's about being comfortable in your body and still going, yeah, well, maybe, you know, when I have sex, it's like my belly's jiggling everywhere and my ass wobbles like a jelly, but it's like, God, I'm horny, I'm hot, and I'm sexy, and it's like, you're going to, you know, you're going to get as much enjoyment out of this as I am.
Have you been reading my diaries?
Talking about, like, the nutritional side of things, do you in your work come across actors or, I guess, just crew in general who might have eating disorders? And then what do you guys do with that? Do you go, is it a red flag?
I haven't really come across anyone like that at all. I suppose, I mean, because also with me, it's very much about promoting health, well, you know, natural bodies as well. So, you know, whether it's, you know, you're big or small, it doesn't really matter. I found most of them were very good eaters. I remember one actor we had actually on the band, he went on a bit of tomato obsession. So he just consumed like copious amounts of tomatoes. And we were asking, like, you know, you're sitting there almost eating them like apples a lot of the time, going, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, well, I've read that apparently the more tomatoes you eat, the more cum you actually make. So, you know, the larger my wad will be. And that was his whole, you know, why he was eating. It wasn't how often, it was the amount that you would produce. He's apparently eating more tomatoes.
I remember it comes up, and it usually comes across also because when you consume mainstream male-on-male pornography, they do, you know, there's always those sidebar ads that comes up, which is something like, you know, make more semen. Mm-hmm. And basically, but there's always this different type of thing. It's, you know, the amount of vitamin E you have. Oysters actually did come up once. I remembered reading something about that. And I'm just plain curious going, really, is this a thing? Like, to create tomatoes, I have not heard of before.
No.
That's surprising. And I'm trying to think how.
I've got no idea. I have no idea.
Something you read somewhere and obsess over.
Yeah, I thought he'd give it a go and see how
well,
it
Well, look, give it a go and did it work?
Oh,
did we notice? Did we notice a change?
I'm just trying to think. Well, because a lot of the time it's not like mainstream porn in terms of the ejaculate shot being so important. And I'm just trying to think. In fact, I don't think there were any scenes where he actually had to ejaculate. So, no, I'm not quite sure.
Oh.
There you go. it's one of those mysteries that we will never know, Patrick.
Where is he? Let's find him.
Oh, my God.
He's living in England, sorry, for now.
Text in on 0427 Joy 949, if you do.
Are you obsessed with tomatoes? Have they enhanced your production levels? Let us know. Email at onair@joy.org.au.
Up next, we are playing, talking about food and nutrition and how people are viewed. We are playing Supermodels by Kendall Payne.
Amazing. You're on the kitchen table. Here on Joy 94.9.
You're on the kitchen table. We're jumping to a song. It's Seth Century's Thanks for Your Hospitality. There is a language warning, but also the song really channels my feelings sometimes about my years in hospitality.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Oh, my God. Steph Century, amazing. I don't know. It's sort of like there's this part in the song where it talks about, you know, working in this particular industry for 10 years and wanting to be an architect. I'm just there going, oh. From a family of, my family's business was architecture, and during the financial crisis, when watching everything collapse, I don't know if you missed out.
In case you didn't notice, we are on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. You're with Patrick, Shannon and Christian. We are joined by the fabulous Anna Brownfield, talking about food and sex.
And how it all works together. We are now... Well, I can't wait for this one. We're going to talk about the sexualization of chefs and hospitality. And is it just an, you know, extension of, you know, celebrification? Or is this just a advertisement to for hospitality? Get involved. Come to a minimum wage.
Woohoo!
But I don't know. I mean, if you read Anthony Bourdain's book Kitchen Confidential, I think was his first one. I mean, you'd think it was an absolute hot cesspool of sexy times going on if you worked in hospitality. I mean, there's people having sex in the dry goods store. There's, you know, it's that high-paced adrenaline thing that you've got to have an outlet for it as well.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, Kitchen Confidential is just full of amazing stories. There was this one where I think he was getting sexually harassed by a superior. And basically, they went to grab Anthony. And I think he turned around and he was armed with, I think, barbecue tongs?
Or was it a fork? I thought it was a fork.
It was like when... And he just stabbed the guy.
The guy in the arm, in the hand, yeah.
Yeah, like, don't grab me.
Yeah.
And the guy never did, but it's just sort of like, it's one of those things where you're watching one of your food heroes. I don't know if you guys have food heroes, but one of my food mentors is definitely Anthony Bourdain. But just listening to this guy having to go through all of that stuff as well, because you realize that you're not the only person who's putting up with sexual harassment. One of your food mentors has had to go there too.
I think, yeah, it was. I mean, I remember my brother talking about working at a particularly large sort of food establishment in Melbourne that shall remain nameless back in the early sort of 90s, basically, to get enough money after he finished uni because he wanted to go overseas. And he said, you know, there were regularly chefs running around chasing other people with large salamis and someone else with a, and you would stop with a chicken, and you can kind of guess what might happen there. But that was quite a regular occurrence, that you'd turn around and have someone, you know, sitting there pretending to dry hump you with a salami and things like that. So maybe what is it about that industry that just, you know, breeds that?
It's kind of weird, because I mean, I remember my first job in Melbourne, and one of the terms that would be loosely thrown around the kitchen was the derogatory term for homosexual or queer, but you know, the very derogatory terms. Can we say that?
Yeah.
If you're saying that's a derogatory term, of course.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you know the term fag would be used as a, you know, a term to put down other chefs. And then I remember my sous chef coming in to where I was sitting, and she's just like, you know, don't get me wrong, I realize that none of my staff here are queer or gay or bi or whatever, but you know, imagine if you were, Shannon, wouldn't that just suck, you know? And I'm just here going, oh yeah, totally.
You have no idea.
Well, I'm just gonna stay in the larder section and make salads.
I think everyone in that industry seems very orally fixated, which seems to just, I don't know, maybe that breeds it.
But I suppose it's also, if you look at how someone's marketed, I mean, you know, Nigella, you know, the way she was marketed, she was always wearing a low-cut top, so her ample bosom was spilling out, you know. She got her hands in there, and she'd always eat, and sort of, you know, it was all...
And it was the language that she used is very evocative.
Yep.
And I mean, and often she would make, you know, this sort of harmless, flirty joke and go, you know, it just joins into my ever-expanding rear. I need to disrobe. Yeah. And it's just with a hint of inner thigh wibble.
It's kind of amazing when you look at the chef and cooking personalities. Like Nigella, she's used like with sex to sell. But when you look at people like, say, Rick Stein, he's definitely not been sold with sex. Does that make sense? Like,
some people find him sexy. I'm not one of them.
Yeah, well, you should just see everyone's kind of just going, huh?
Yeah, I was just waiting for the admission then.
I do have a secret nerd thing, but that's another show. Anyway.
Well, is that what it is? It's maybe his brain is the thing that's really sexy about him, that it's not necessarily a physical body thing.
His brain is definitely sexy. Like, the things man knows about seafood is just great.
Mm.
Mm. And I think, you know, when you talk about... I think what makes chefs sexy is you're talking about very skilled people working with their hands to create something that gives people pleasure.
Sometimes, though, I mean, it's also, I think, the sheer passion and joy that they have for their craft. Because I find that I enjoy, as like, if we're looking at celebrity cooks and celebrity chefs, I enjoy people who are actually not trained as chefs more. And I don't know why. I think it's because they
have
this genuine...
That's harsh. Talking to a trained chef here.
I know, but... I find that their shows I find a lot more appealing because of the passion that they have and the admittance of being unskilled in a certain area. I also find very human. So I think for me, like, but I mean, Shannon, you've expressed that some places you're not skilled in, with your sushi plate.
I know.
But so I think it's when they're human instead of just going, look what I can do. I can do this, la-di-da-di-da-di-da. Look how handy I am with my knife. And it's just going, I can never do that.
So it is it the shows that appeal to you and get you excited are the ones that have sort of the amateur cook or the amateur chef
or
the home cook who's making good sort of thing? Is that, you know, who's learning how to plate?
I suppose so. But then, I mean, at the same time, Jamie Oliver, so... He's not an amateur cook, is
he? But he started off, he was very much about it all. He's become more and more like a home cook sort of thing. Yeah. Whereas I think if you look at his early stuff, I mean, it appeared quite simple. Yeah, but it was still quite, you know, labor intensive. And it was all about, well, you don't go out and buy that and you know, you have to hand cut it and rip it and do it all this sort of way. Whereas now his sort of thing is like, okay, well, get a meal done in 15 minutes. So it's, you know, it's quick and about feeding your family or feeding them on a budget. Mm. You know, he sort of moved from like, I'm a chef to like, I'm just a home cook that's helping you out sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. He's definitely become more of a food educator.
Mm.
Absolutely. You are on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. It is our last show. If you would like to catch up with any of our podcasts and all of the extra material that the fabulous Shannon produces, you can find all of those recordings at the kitchen table page on Joy 94.9's website. So that's joy.org.au/thekitchentable.
Hmm. Get involved. Sometimes it's a bit controversial.
Just saying.
Who was able to find a link to genocide in West Papua by seaweed farming?
Amazing. Still related to food. That's what we do here on the kitchen table on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are on the kitchen table for its very last time for the very foreseeable future. I want to take this time to basically say thank you to my fabulous technical producer, Christian Vega, my lovely co-host who's put up with my rants, and there's been a lot, Patrick Whelan-Smith.
I've got to say, though, Shannon, a huge, huge kudos goes to you for being our producer, our receiver of rants, as well as delivering them, being able to come up with the most interesting content. And I get to find out so much, and I'm sure Christian has as well, although Christian's a lot more intelligent than I am. So it has been magnificent to be a part of the kitchen table and be on your kitchen table.
I love it that we're all on the kitchen table. I also, a special thank you to Anna Brownfield from Poison Apple Productions for coming in today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I feel a bit sad that it's your last show, but I feel honoured that I've been a part of it.
We wanted to share it with you.
What a way to go out. What a way to go out, though.
Yeah, we're a food show. We wanted the poison apple on somewhere.
Because, when I grow up, I want to be an evil queen.
On that note...
And, of course, a special thank you to Dr. John Kramer from Wellington Polytechnic, who all of those years ago taught me how to cook.
And failed you for sushi.
Failed me for sushi.
Thank you very much.
The song you can hear in the background is Natalie Merchant and the 10,000 Maniacs singing It Candy Everybody Wants. This is the first song we played.
Amazing. It's come full circle.
Thank you, team. I love you lots and I will miss you and I wish you the very best of luck in all your future endeavours.
Amazing.
Thank you very much, Shannon.
Thanks heaps, Shannon.
Thank you. Good luck.
You've been on the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9.
GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.